Hello and welcome to The Squeal, PIC's swine management podcast featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. As we continue our series on feeding the PIC sow for optimum performance, today we focus on gestation rations and feeding programs. Today's guest for part two of this series, Arkansas State's Dr. Steve Dreetz, PIC's Weasley Orlando, and Marcio Gonzalez, former PIC nutritionist and founder of the swine.it platform.
Is there something that we can do nutritionally that will help ensure maximum piglet weight once she farrows?
That's an area that's evolved over time.
I'm thinking about during gestation.
Okay, moving into the gestation end of things. Can we influence birth weight? You know, certainly Marcio has done work in that area. We've done some more work in the area, and other people have done work too. When you look at influencing birth weight, is actually very difficult. It's a very conserved type of thing because, for example, in Marcio's PhD work, we were able to influence birth weight by about 30 grams, which is actually about 1 ounce per piglet, where the difference between gilt and sow litters is over 100 grams per piglet. So the influence on nutrition on birth weight is very, very mild. And I think that's an area where we have to move away from thinking that we can really influence it nutritional wise. It's a very popular concept amongst nutritionists and veterinarians that we're going to feed for adequate birth weight. And I always say I can't really make birth weight better, but I can screw it up.
Yeah, I agree with Steve. And if I turn back like 10 years, what happened? We have more and more piglets born alive today than 10 years ago, right? And this is something that is still growing today, okay? It's still increasing. And what happened? Nutrition, I remember my times as nutritionist in a company, right? The genetic company arrived and say, hey, you guys do not know how can feed these animals, these modern sows. I say, okay, teach me. I'm really good to learn. I mean, let me know. So I'm glad that I'm here today on the other side of the table, because maybe I say, yeah, let's try. But you know that the genetic PIC is doing a good job improving birth weight by actually genomic and some strategies in selection. This is a focus from PIC. But in terms of nutrition, and we know in Marcio and the last trials that we have drawn in several places, in Brazil, we have here in North America, and it's more and more consistent that we have more troubles when you try to overfeeding or get more energy or so. We have some response for energy, right, in the trial that Marcio have done. But so I think the key, it's turning back for body condition, is get the right weight in the first insemination and control the intake during the first pair to make sure that this gilt will be arrived in the first fairing in a good body condition. Because if you have an overweight, we have a lower feed intake, and probably more catabolism, and you have more losses in the second or next period. So this is something really clear today.
I guess I've learned two things in gestation over the last couple of years. One, that the bump feeding can actually have a negative impact. You know, we've quantitated the negative impact on stillbirths. I think we've always generally had a feeling that overweight sows, and there's some evidence in the literature that overweight sows have a negative impact on stillbirth rate, but I don't think it was clear in the literature, and now I think that's becoming fairly clear. that you know, we can create negatives. And that's where I always get much more conservative. I always, you know, tell clients, I don't care if you spend your money and waste it, but if you're spending your money and you're wasting it and you're causing negative impacts, then I'll let you know.
This is a really good opportunity. But if I ask him for the geneticist in the very beginning, they say, hey, why you should do that? And the answer is because Dr. Dietrich said, I mean, we are not looking for saving money. We are caring because we are compromising performance. If there is no impacting performance, we're still doing this by nutrition, but probably geneticists say, no, I will not do that. Okay? But actually, it's against performance. If you are overfeed, and I have an overweight, I have a lower or poor performance during the lactation and across the other periods, right?
So what is current PIC recommendation on pre-farrowing that last 72 hours?
You know, today, PIC recommendation, you know, in assuming here a corn soy, energy equivalent of a corn soy diet, just for reference here, it's around 5 pounds. However, there are a few studies now, and there are more ongoing studies on trying to understand better this transition phase, right? And should we feed them ad libitum? There are some studies with ad libitum that seem to help on colostrum production. We always need to be careful because if we are moving some of these cells 5 days or more, and we're full feeding them for a long period, that's probably not good, right? For stillborn and all those things. But for a couple of days, seem to help there. At the same time, if we have a fat herd, that's where we don't want to ad lib them for 2-3 days, right? Before we need to fix that they're fat. But those would be some highlights there. I don't know, Weasley, Steve, what else on that arena?
We've kind of moved into another phase here. The transition phase, I think, is very important. You know, if you take the dairy literature, certainly they focus on the transition to bring cows into milk production. The transition feeding just prior to parturition is certainly important to initiating milk production and getting that cow ready to go. And so I think in pigs too, in the sow, certainly that transition phase, we think that's an area of investigation. We have a graduate student that's actually doing a large scale commercial study this summer, looking at the transition phase and trying to figure out, you know, what kind of impact do we have on productivity and colostrum intake and those kinds of things. So the challenge with the transition phase is if you want to run a separate diet from the practicality of the way our farms are set up, it doesn't work very well from our feeding system management at all.
Yeah, I think this is a good point that Steve comments about managing them. I mean, we can create actually in our computers, in our head, with some new concepts or even old papers that we have some good information. But actually, to operate this, to manage this, is really tough today. But I do believe one thing. And we are invested today in projects or in new trials to get more information, strong information to support actually new recommendation for this period. We know that is a short period of time. We have customer that move in a day before, and we have a customer with 5 days, not more. I would say it's more common, let's say 2-3 days, not 5 days, but we have customer that have like 7 days, right? So anyway, what the data that we have today do not support create a transition diet or say, hey, you guys have to invest in the new diet because we have this. Right now, unfortunately, PIC do not have strong information to support this new diet. But where you are running, we are planning to run a trial here in the United States, and we are probably this year running more two trials in Brazil with this concept to try to figure out what can we do in this transition diet.
I would point out the one thing that I'm pretty confident in is we don't want to limit feed prior to farrowing. You know, we've seen where people have given 1.5 kilograms or 1 to 2 pounds prior to farrowing, and then if the sow delays 1 or 2 days, they've been on this limit fed for 2 to 5 days, and you create a lot of problems then when you transition them to full feed into lactation. So that's something I'm pretty confident we don't want to do.
Would you agree, Dr. Dreetz, about the management ability really being a key limitation in what we're doing nutritionally during that pre-farrowing phase?
Yes, certainly, from a management standpoint, and then that brings into the late gestation diet requirements too. It's a good example of modeling those requirements are certainly elevated because that's when the largest proportion of the litter growth is taking place. But in practicality out in, as we've done these large scale commercial gestation requirement studies, those sows are highly resilient, you know, and that the impacts, you know, we've had very modest impacts on birth weight and we, so definitely that sow is able to, she's a very resilient animal, and we have her in a appropriate body condition with adequate body stores and not excess body stores. She can mobilize a lot of her own tissues to meet requirements. So I think the modeling data isn't exactly agreeing with what we're seeing out in the field and under practical conditions.
Yeah, I would add there's a very interesting study from Guelph where they fed the diets the dream of the nutritionist, which is basically, like, to your point on implementation, they were able to implement a diet every single day of gestation, change amino acids and energy, versus a simple program where they fed one diet, one level. Guess what happened?
The same.
Back to Steve's point, the sow is a very resilient animal. You know, in late gestation, the priority of the sow is the fetus. Just like the lactating sow, the priority is the litter. That's why she produces milk, loose body condition. You know, we are taught in school that reproduction is a luxury, and that's true in early gestation, you know. But in late gestation, she already has skin in the game, and she's already committed, and she's going to do anything she can to that. And that's why we are not being able to manipulate the birth weight.
Yeah. And actually, just adding one thing, Steve, since you found my business card, my old business card this week, he sent it from probably 2002. I remember when I started this business, it was funny because there's a lot of customer working let's say a late gestation diet, right? Or a pre-farrowing diet. And of course, for me, if I check the books and say, hey, gestation is by phase, makes a lot of sense for me. But was really hard to find good places that work with this diet. And I try to figure out why. Say, hey, why? When I check actually the diets, mostly what happened, they overfeeding sows with this diet. Because they put everything that they know, but in terms of performance, it does not actually translate in performance. And nowadays, with the data that we have support this, we actually are trying to do something different based on only trials that sometimes work with the nitrogen balance. And we are overfeeding actually these animals in the late gestation. So I agree with you guys. I mean, and try to work as simple as possible maybe is the good way today. Maybe tomorrow we discover something new, but today I would say the simple as possible in gestation and controlling body condition, it's probably the best way to feed in gestation.
So don't worry about the, I mean, you have your components, you have your feeding guideline,
right.
manage the feed delivery.
You know,
I'm in the condition, absolutely.
Yeah, I worked 5 years, my last 5 years before joining PSC with broilers, right? If you ask it for a broiler nutritionist, you say, broiler, it's a kind of a growing finished pigs, right? Broiler breeders is pretty much the same gestation diet. I mean, gestation diet is important. It is important. But feed management is much more important. If you're asking for a broiler breeder nutritionist, you say everything that I do by nutrition is really like a 10%. The 90% happen in a farm when they feed my diet.
And that's a really good point, Weasley. I'm glad you brought us back to the gestation because I wanted to make a few more points on the gestation side. That's the second point that I've learned over the last few years is, and we've learned it through this electronic cell feeding actually that has driven a lot of people crazy. There was a lot of promise that we could feed sows individually and feed a curve and all this thing. But on the most successful farms, what I've seen happening is they're simplifying the gestation feeding program and feeding, you know, we've got some of our best farms that are feeding the same gestation feed level to every sow on the farm. You know, they're focusing on getting sows into condition in the first 35 days after weaning. And then basically they're, you know, if you get them in good condition, they're basically setting them, and managing and focusing their management time then on, you know, individual sows. Why do I have a skinny sow at 35 days of gestation? It usually isn't because I have an inadequate diet or inadequate feed or something like that. It's because she's got some type of medical problem. She's lame. She's got some type of injury. You know, just pouring feed to her isn't going to cure that problem. You got to treat the primary medical problem.
And sometimes they brought this trouble since the guild to develop. I mean, starting at the guilds and moving to the gestation with this problem.
Yeah, you know. One more thing I would add there is for the farms that are still have sows individually housed and have the feed box, you know, that's one with the turnover we have in the staff sometimes in the farms, you know, sometimes the new staff think that the 4 pounds in the box means 4 pounds to the sows, and that's likely not the case. And so, you know, when you have diet changes from high fiber to a low fiber diet due to market conditions or sometimes new crop changing moisture from that crop or something like that, you wanna make sure you are weighing the few boxes, and you also wanna make sure when you do it again you go and you weigh the same boxes because there's quite a bit of variation across boxes as well. So that's one thing from an implementation standpoint you're talking about.
Again, that's exactly right. I totally agree with Marcio. Simplifying the gestation program doesn't mean we're just blindly going out and setting all the boxes. We're still going out and checking things And then he brings up another good point of when you get a diet formulation or a bulk density change in the gestation diet, I take that as my responsibility as a nutritionist that I need to communicate that to the production staff because that'll impact how they're setting the gestation feed settings. And of course, too, we also, from the veterinarian standpoint, they usually give us a good signal at the farm as well or the production staff. When the sows are being fed below their maintenance requirements and starting to get thin, certainly that's, you know, when we're simplifying the gestation feeding program, and feeding one level, we're assuming those sows are at thermoneutral and they're not needing feed to maintain their body condition.
You know, Ned, I think we're coming full circle here that body condition is very important. The biggest challenge of body condition is that's very subjective. You know, one sow farm manager thinks one thing's ideal, the next one thinks something else is ideal. Well, one thing that a few producers we work with have been very successful in the last year or so with is that tool developed by North Carolina State University there, Dr. Mark Naur. It's called the Caliper. And that's been a good tool. Initially, you know, a lot of people are skeptical with something new and any other tool. I don't know if there's a tool that's perfect, but it's like a referee in a game. The referee is not always right, but it's one opinion, and that's important for a large system. And I think it's been a good use case there of something very simple that brings quite a bit of value there for farms.
Yeah, that's a good tool for sure, because if you have a five farms and five farm manager, each one have their own opinion about body condition. I remember before Caliper, when I talk with the people, mostly when I visit the farm, I change the opinion for the farm manager after the visit, because they always think that the right body condition is slightly above than the right one, because they are always concerned about skin cells, you know, and they try to say, let's put a little bit higher to make sure that I do not have skin cells. I remember last year, visiting a farm with Dr. Piva, Jose Piva. It was funny because we start 6 in the morning, we finish 4, and Piva check all 3,500 cells in the herd, right? So and it was funny because the farm manager was saying, hey, look at these cells. And the problem there was total born, okay? Low total born. I say, well, you know, check in and you say, oh, look at this kid. I can say for you guys, 3,500 cells, they have 50 skin cells, right? But at least 70% of that herd was really overweight. And what is the problem for the farm manager? That 50 cells. In the end, it was not that. They have a really kind of 2 digits stillborn. Yeah. I mean, it's really, the problem is more overfit. But for today, they say, no, this is not the problem. And if you see the paper from Dr. Mark Naur, he showed clear that we have losses with the skin animals with not good body condition. But we also have losses when you have overweight cells, I mean, fat cells.
You know, on that note, if you get someone that has never seen a pig, which honestly, sometimes 30, 50 or 80 or 100% of a sow farm today is that profile. They never seen a pig sometimes. They can identify the skinny one. Same thing. But it's for them, the fat one is normal. And that's where we as professionals in this industry, we need to help identify that.
And this is an area where I agree with Marcio. It's a useful tool from the standpoint of where I think it's the most use is what we see happen is over time a farm drifts because you're in the farm every day working. And, you know, the body condition of the herd as an overall changes slowly over time. And the people working there every day don't, you know, recognize that. And that's when you come in as an outside person. And that's where I think the Caliper tool can be quite useful because it's a pretty, when done correctly, I think it's a fairly objective measure. From that standpoint, where I disagree with Marcio a little bit is I don't think it's that useful a tool for gestation feeding. people get confused, you know, what do I do when they're overweight? What do I do, you know, those kinds of things. There's no real correlation with, well, I should change the boxes by this if it's this category. So I think that's the part where people, it isn't really a tool for feeding. It's a tool for checking the herd as a whole.
And I'm thinking, if I've got a tool in my toolbox and it gives me an indicator, I'm okay with that, but I understand what you're saying. You really can't respond to that as an evaluator.
Yeah, and maybe a simpler way to put it, Ned, is it's a good indicator at the herd level. It's maybe not so good an indicator to manage an individual sow.
Let's say I agree, but I would say I had something, but maybe disagree with Steve. I mean, we do not have to put a caliper and just change it all the time. I mean, we check in and change. But I think in terms of, this is the part that I agree with Dr. Steve, we need to check, have one photo for one picture from today, and actually start working on this to move in the right direction to have more target, right? But the way to do that is not a caliper. Caliper is just a tool. A check with a tool, right? The way to do is feed management. And then you have to change, or by nutritionist, formulate the diet if there is something that is possible to do. I mean, check if they are working with more amino acids or more energy or something, or low particle size or palatin. But in the end, if you have a really picture today that show that I have 40% of the herd and the fat body condition, we need to do something by managing and adjusting the feeders. So, but I agree, and the point that is just a tool, is a good tool to check, okay, the condition. But the next step is changing the feeders.
So, any questions?
I have one for Steve. You broke a paradigm for me, right? Because I work on with the feeding protocol during gestation, really complicated, up to, let's say, 3.5 kilos in the late gestation. This is about 80 pounds, right? 8 pounds. It's really complicated. And I met Steve and I asked, hey, Steve, and how about this and this? And Steve say, you know, did you visit the farm? Say, yes. What do you think about the performance? Say, yeah, it was really amazing. Said, what is your focus in your company in Brazil? Is performance or just numbers? And they say, yeah, it's performance and making economic as much as economical as possible. So, and then I change. I mean, I'm really changed that time. This is, I'm talking about 2008, right? So today, Steve, my question for you is, if I met you again and I ask you, are you comfortable with stop bump feeding? Or do you recommend me to work with bump feeding in any category?
You know, predicated on getting an adequate body condition going into day 85, 90 of gestation, I'm more than comfortable with flat feeding and not bump feeding. I think the scientific evidence is, I mean, I advocated it for many years, but I think the scientific evidence is telling us that we can cause some harm there, and so we've changed our recommendations. You know, I'm fully comfortable with that recommendation.
Have another one for you, Steve. Are we feeding the sow today for what she can deliver, you know? Are we comfortable where we are today from a feeding standpoint? I wanted to get your opinion on that.
Well, I'll take a quote from Al Lehman. I reserve the right to change my mind when I have new information. You know, what I'm advocating today is what I think is best for the sow and most economical. But I'm not telling you it's perfectly right or that we're not going to change in the future. I'm giving you my best estimate right now today with what the information we know.
I absolutely agree. I mean, and as we look across the data we've done, I mean, look at the study Laurie Thomas conducted on amino acids, you know, we double the amount of amino acids in gestation trying to improve something in a herd that has 16 total born, and we don't see a whole lot of change. So I would agree with that too.
Yeah, and just talking about economical standpoint about regarding this, of course, I remember 2 years ago Steve presenting on a feed deficiency conference about the piece in gestation and lactation represented for the full feed deficiency, for the herd feed deficiency, it's about 15%, maximum 15%. But this 15%, when I compare actually PIC old recommendation with the new recommendation, we can improve easy in about 3%, up to 3%. So if I talk just for about the growing finish, we need to spend like 5 years to improve 3% in feed efficiency. So this is one piece in reproduction, and turning back about the Marcus and Steve point again. We are doing this and improve performance. We are not doing this just to get, make savings. We are doing this because we need our sauce is really, really efficient.
And I totally agree with that, Weasley. You know, one person can look at that and say 15%, well, I can't make a big impact nutritionally, so I'm just going to overfeed and do that. Another person can look at it as 15%. That's a significant amount of feed in the herd, and you know, and certainly if we do something, we can make a significant impact on economics too. So I can make both arguments from that standpoint. I don't want to underplay the importance of breeding herd nutrition, and I don't want to overplay it.
Joining us on The Squeal today were a special guest, Dr. Steve Dreetz, along with Marcio Gonzalez from swine.it and PIC's Weasley Orlando discussing best breeding herd nutritional practices. You're welcome to share this PIC podcast widely in your organization. In fact, we encourage it. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.